Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer, producer of this program, and I'll be your host. Earlier this month, The Trapdoor hosted a storytelling showcase at Welch's Ale House, and we are about to hear from the first of the storytellers from that night. Before we begin, special thanks to Ben Larson, Courtney Heiser, John Cheesebrew, and Becca Bell from The Trapdoor for hosting this event and helping to facilitate our broadcasting of the stories now. The first storyteller was Scott Brown, a newcomer to Northeast Indiana, originally from Western PA. Please enjoy the show.
So I had the most amazing opportunity to grow up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Absolutely. The food, the culture, the people, it was an amazing childhood. But growing up in Pittsburgh also gave me a little bit of an unrealistic expectation about life. See, I expected the Steelers to be in the playoffs every year. I expected everyone to have lifetime employment because that's what my family said we would have. And I thought that Pittsburgh was a place that you moved to, not that you moved from. See, the only people I knew when I was a kid were my family, because most of us, when we're seven, we don't have a huge social network. And mine consisted of, well, just my family, and nobody in my family ever left. They moved to Pittsburgh and they stayed there. Now, the story my grandfather tells is that back in about 1920 or so, he and his sister and their parents boarded a steamship in Ireland and headed out for a new adventure and a better life, to go someplace where the Industrial Revolution was taking hold and they didn't have to be potato farmers anymore. They thought the idea of having a steel mill or a coal mine job seemed way better for their family's future than what they had in Ireland. So they boarded a ship and headed out on their massive journey to come to America. And about halfway across the Atlantic, my grandfather says, I met this amazing woman and her brothers and sisters. They were the best thing I had ever come across on the ship. And it was love at first sight. As soon as my eyes gazed, I knew that your grandmother's brother was meant to be with me. He was nine. Nine-year-olds love nine-year-old boys, right? And so the McKeever clan and the McClenic clan all of a sudden became intertwined. And it just happened that those two families were moving to the same part of Pennsylvania. They moved to this little town about 20 miles south of Pittsburgh called Monongahela, which is where I kind of grew up. And a Monongahela is as quaint as it is hard to spell. But it's an amazing place that is really built upon the bedrock of the coal industry and the steel industry. And nobody ever leaves. Now, my grandparents, of course, at 9 years old, weren't a thing yet. And about a decade later, all of a sudden, my grandfather realized one day, hey, this little girl that's always hanging around, that's my best friend's sister, she's kind of cute. And all of a sudden, James Norville and Mary Eliza became a thing and became the foundation of my family. Well, when you grow up in a place like Monongahela, there aren't a lot of jobs out there. And my grandfather's the only person that I know who at one point in his life decided to leave the rough, dangerous world of being a coal miner for the relative safety of working in a steel mill. That's the kind of family I grew up with. Their house was built on top of a hill, and underneath it was an abandoned coal mine. So as a kid, where do you think I wanted to play? We played tag, and we played hide-and-go-seek in the coal mine. Because nothing bad can happen with a bunch of kids in a coal mine. And we would come home, and we'd go to our family's houses. And I remember my grandmother used to stand me up against the wall by the garage, strip me down naked, pull out the hose and make me do like the flash dance as she hosed me off with just this one piece of advice: don't tell your mother. So that was my childhood. It was this amazing, eclectic experience being able to experience everything that Pennsylvania was. But it wasn't my only childhood, because my father's family was the exact opposite. Now, if you know anything about the steel mills and coal mines, you know that there's a little bit of a friction that exists between the white-collar people who run those companies and the blue-collar people who have to work in those places. So what do you think my dad's family did? My great-grandfather was a controller for U.S. Steel. My family were the people that got to decide what mills and mines stayed open and which mills and mines closed. So imagine Thanksgiving dinner at our house. On one side of the table, all of the blue-collar, salt-of-the-earth, my mom's side of the family. On the other side of the table, all of the white-collar, I can't believe I have to sit here with our workers side of the family. And I learned during that experience that the best way to throw a chair is to pick it up from the legs. I remember when I was a kid, and one of the first times I ever got to go to a jail was to bail my uncle out and my other uncle out because of that friction. Now, that friction exists not just in my family, but existed all throughout Western Pennsylvania. But it was all okay as long as everything stayed open. And then fifth grade happened. Because between 1978 and 1983, Pittsburgh lost about 130,000 manufacturing jobs. And if you didn't know somebody that lost their job, well, you knew somebody who lost their job, or you weren't actually living in Pittsburgh at the time. And when I was a kid, nobody had left. Like, Pittsburgh was a destination we all moved to, and we stayed. When I was in kindergarten, we had about 830 kids that were going to be in my graduating class. By the time I graduated, we were 525. Because at some point, around fifth grade, people started disappearing. And it wasn't like there was an alien abduction or like manifest was taking place. It was that you would go to someone's birthday party. Like, I would go to Sean Rager's birthday party on a Saturday, and by Monday, he wouldn't be in school anymore. And the seat that we saved him for lunch all of a sudden was empty forever. And then I went to Jeff Tyson's birthday party in June, and by August, Jeff was gone. And then I went to Otto Leone's birthday party, and he was gone. So I got to think it was me. But it wasn't. It was the fact that everyone had to move and do something else because life was changing, and Pittsburgh was all of a sudden a place that you had to leave in order to have a better life. You had to move away. The one that hurt the most, was Todd Pfeiffer. Now, Todd Pfeiffer was my best friend from kindergarten because Todd Pfeiffer was the only one that took a chance to play with me. You see, in nursery school, they decided that I should come back for one extra year. That's what happens when you convince your entire nursery school class to follow you on their tricycle down the stairs, out the landing, down the stairs, and straight to the hospital. I sent 22 nursery school kids to the hospital. And for some reason, they thought maybe I didn't play well enough with others to go to public school. But Todd said, I think that makes you interesting, so I'm going to be friends with you. Because life at my house, my dad's a Honeywell executive, is kind of boring. He's an engineer. Nobody does anything crazy like ride tricycles down the stairs. So we became the best of friends. And Todd had this amazing gift that all he wanted to do was read. But all my parents did was work. So Todd taught me to read. And during those times that it became tough to find the next meal, where do you think I went for lunch and dinner? Pfeiffer's. Because that was my second family, and they helped raise me. When Honeywell closed, I can remember the day that I stood in Todd's driveway and watched the moving truck close the doors and pull away as they went to Plano, Texas. Now, we didn't have Facebook back then, so we had to rely on writing letters to each other. And as 13-year-olds, we weren't good at that. And we lost touch. And a part of me died that day. A part of me that never really came back because Todd was gone. And everyone moved. Everyone moved. Well, it wasn't just people moving away from Pittsburgh that really kind of struck a chord. It was also the fact that during that time, my family became kind of like nomadic gypsies, that we moved from house to house around Pittsburgh and around Mount Lebanon, where my parents lived, because, well, I guess when you don't pay the rent or the mortgage, the landlord says, we think you should move. So I got to live in a lot of different places. I became a professional boxer. It wasn't that I liked to fight in a ring. I just loved the smell of cardboard in the spring. Became amazing at moving. And by the time that I graduated from high school, I had already lived in 13 places. By the time I graduated from college, that number had gone up. And by the time that I had turned 29, that number was already at 28. Now, when you move that much, you begin to realize that you need to live small and live light, because you need to be able to pack stuff in the back of a Geo Metro and stay one step ahead of whoever's chasing you, whether it's somebody in your life or just the memories of who you've left behind. When I was 29 years old, I all of a sudden, I had been divorced and I had moved again. And one day, when I was at work, I met the most magnificent creature I had ever seen. The most magnificent person I'd ever laid my eyes on. And Kelly and I started to date in October of 1997. And by January, I realized that if I didn't turn my life upside down and do everything I could to try to stay with her, that I was a fool. So one January day, it looked a lot like it does outside right now. I couldn't feel my fingers then either. And she said, you know, I had done the college program at Disney. I want to go south and live in Florida. I still hadn't left Pittsburgh, really. But I thought two things. I'd be a fool if I don't follow. And I'm a professional boxer, so the worst thing that happens is we break up and I'm in Florida. So we moved to Florida in March of 1998. And Kelly and I had the saying that life is an adventure, and the adventure started in 1998. We moved to Orlando, and our careers took us around Orlando, and then they took us to South Florida, Boca Raton, then they took us to Los Angeles, California, then they brought us back to Orlando, Florida, then they brought us back down to Fort Lauderdale, and then they brought us back to Orlando, Florida. You see a pattern here? We like to go back places. We kind of have this yo-yo life where we go to and from and to and from. But we keep coming back to those places that we call home. And over time, we started to realize that packing and boxing was much more important than what we had thought. Because you're not just boxing up the stuff you have, but you're carrying with you the memories of the places you've lived, the relationships that you've built, and the family that you've chosen to have. Because all of our relatives were still in Pennsylvania. We were the ones that had run away to someplace different and tried a different life. Well, we had this rule. We will only live somewhere where we have sand beneath our toes. We won't move unless we're going to a sand state. So it was August, and we were in Destin, Florida on vacation with her college roommate who happened to marry my best friend from Pittsburgh. You kind of see where that might happen. And we were in Destin, Florida, and I remember the day that we were walking down the beach, and she got a call, and she kind of dropped behind us as we were walking down the beach. It was me and her ex-roommate's husband, Anik and Chris. We're walking down the beach, and I turn and I look behind me, and I see her face go white. And I turn to Anik and I go, I don't think sand's going to be beneath our feet much longer. I know, it's dramatic, isn't it? I remember sitting there the day that she told me, well, my boss took a job and he's now going to be a VP somewhere else. So they've asked me to look after his job for the next few months. but they're not going to make this move yet. And I'm like, I saw this coming. See, because last March, we had decided we're tired of boxing. We're tired of living out of suitcases. We're going to build a house. So we built a house on a lake with a pond with one of those giant southern oak trees in the backyard and a gator that we named Elvis in the pond behind us. And our neighbor said, you guys move a lot. You think you're going to be here? And Kelly's like, yeah, sure. And I'm like, I don't know. And then at some point they had a restructure and her area got a lot bigger. And then they had another restructure and it got a lot bigger. And now all of a sudden I'm standing on a beach in Destin, Florida going, oh, where exactly is Fort Wayne, Indiana? Because I knew where Indiana was, but I hadn't looked up Fort Wayne. I didn't know where Fort Wayne was. The day that she told me we were moving to Fort Wayne, Indiana, I could hear the expression in her voice of just this amazing opportunity and the happiness and the joy, and the adventure was continuing. And it was something that she wanted to do. And years ago, as we moved, I made the decision that I was going to leave the corporate world because one of us had to have a job that we could pick up and go if the unthinkable happened and we went someplace that there wasn't something else for someone to do. And I wanted her to have every opportunity to go as far as her career could take her and never have a glass ceiling that I helped build. And this was my chance to either put up or shut up. So in her happiness, I sat back and said, this is why we've been doing this. Let the adventure continue. So there's something about moving to Fort Wayne and moving back to the winter that you tend to forget. The number one thing you tend to forget is winter is cold. I remembered the concept of winter. I just forgot what it actually felt like. I had to go on YouTube and look up how to put on a scarf because I have dogs to walk and I needed to be able to breathe. I forgot how to put on my jacket. I look like I'm wrestling a baby octopus and losing terribly every time I put on a coat. But here we are, no sand beneath our feet. And we've decided that this will be our forever home. As we were driving today, I looked over and I looked and Kelly was looking up houses for sale. So this will be our forever home until, well, what are you guys doing in October? Thanks, everyone.
WBOI Presents will return with more from the Trapdoor after a short break. Thank you for listening to 89.1 WBOI.